Welcome to We Are Libertarians. This is Chris Spangle, and with me is Joe Ruiz and and Greg Lenz. And we are talking to Ladar Levison, and he is the founder of the LavaBit email service and hosting service. Obviously, it was in the news after the Edward Snowden releases over the summer, and they actually shut down their email service. So, Ladar, thank you for joining us today.
Joe, thank you for having me. I've been spending the last couple of months standing on my soapbox talking about this issue, and you know, it's just exciting to know that, you know, people like your listeners actually want to hear about it.
Yeah, and we want to start with the story of LavaBit. Tell us a little bit about the history of what it is, and then where you ended up after the Edward Snowden releases.
Well, we start with the first half of the question. I founded LavaBit in April of 2004. I actually called it Nerd Shack for the first year and a half, but apparently Nerd Shack was a little bit too geeky for some of my users. So we ended up changing the name to LavaBit. But I effectively started it as an email service by geeks for geeks. And I very quickly, once I got into the hosting business, and learned about the Patriot Act and NFLs, just given my own personal political beliefs, really catered the service towards people who had privacy concerns and wanted a secure email service that wasn't going to be sharing their data with advertisers and, you know, just in general, with any other third parties. And I even went so far to build the platform in a way that if you activated the feature, and there were reasons to activate it and reasons not to, but if you activated the feature and you signed up for a secure account, I would actually store all of your information in encrypted form so even I couldn't access it. And it was really sort of my way of fighting against national security letters and the Patriot Act. I wanted to remove myself from the equation. I get a national security letter, and I simply say, sorry, folks, I don't have any data to give you, or at least any that you can use. Unless you know the person's password, you can't read their emails. And, you know, we sort of grew up in a niche that, you know, I built the service sort of organically over 10 years, and, you know, we grew and grew, and it wasn't until maybe 2-3 years ago that I was finally able to focus on it full time. I had another full time employee that helped me out, and you know, we were quite happy. And then the summer of Snowden hit, and all of a sudden privacy and security became hot topics, and business was booming. I think we had at least a 200-300% increase in revenue in the month right before I shut down. And things were looking good, but you know, for the same reasons that the world was starting to use my service, I think the government noticed me too. I had finally gotten big enough and had enough political dissidents using my service that, you know, they wanted to start listening to them. And you know, I've kind of been told that, off the record from people that know more about these things than myself, that basically they looked at it as closing a gap in their surveillance network. You know, if most of the other email service providers in the country are already being monitored, you know, well, I'm just one more organization that they can put a tap on and get that much more information. And that's kind of the position I ended up in. And, you know, just based on my own personal feelings and my own understanding of the technology involved and the implications of what they were trying to do, I just wasn't comfortable with it. You know, they wanted me, and this is the part that, you know, I've only been able to say for the last 24 hours, but they wanted to turn over the private SSL key that I used to basically confirm to my users that they were talking to my service, and in turn, encrypt all of the communications coming in and out of my network. And what they wanted to do was effectively decrypt all of that data coming in and out, and examine it, and in theory, only record some very small pieces of information that belong to a specific user. But if they only wanted to do that, then why weren't they willing to provide any kind of transparency back to me to allow me to confirm that was exactly what they were doing? And so, they wouldn't. And, you know, just given all the revelations, I'm actually, they almost confirmed my suspicions. You know, I had a very scary moment where an FBI agent was in my apartment demanding these SSL keys, claiming that they had the authority to do so, when in fact I found out later on that he didn't, but telling me that they were going to be capturing content, they were going to be capturing people's passwords, their usernames, their IP addresses that they were logging in from, all of this information that I basically built the system to try and protect. And they were going to be doing it using a capability that those of us in the field didn't know existed. And that was the ability to effectively decrypt, you know, 10,000 SSL connections in real time and listen to all of those people talking to my server in real time. And, you know, what was even scarier is that I had never heard of something like this before, and they wouldn't allow me to share it. And, you know, I started asking around other people that I knew in the industry, people with clearance levels, and they were like, yeah, you know, this has been going on for a couple of years, and, you know, they don't like people knowing it because if people know what they're doing, they'll just make changes to their systems to make it even harder for them to do this.
Ladar, are you saying yeah. that the whole notion of them just collecting metadata is complete BS? I mean, I'm not a technical person. They say that they only collect the metadata of these emails that go back and forth, which has, you know, your email address, which most people mm-hmm. have their name in it, the IP address.
Well, here's the thing about meta information. The way the internet is designed, metadata and content are mixed. They are right next to each other. So, yes, they could have been discarding the content, but my guess is that they were actually recording everything and looking at it. The difference is what they can use in court, and they can only use the stuff in court that they were authorized to collect. So they can use the meta information in court, but they could probably, at least in a, you know, intelligence gathering scenario, you know, where they're trying to gather, for example, intelligence on enemies of state, you know, they don't really exactly have any rules restricting what they can and can't do. It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And the fact is, once they had access to these keys, it would have been a simple matter to go get a warrant that would have given them the legal authority they needed to look at the content. And because they had the keys already, they wouldn't have had to tell me that they had that. They could have gotten a warrant that would have allowed them to collect my password and look at my emails or any other users on my system and just say, well, he doesn't have a need to know anymore, so we're not going to tell him. And,
hey, Ladar.
You know, I had a problem with that.
Can you speak a little bit to the manner in which the authorities contacted you? Were they aggressive at all in their approach and asking for this information?
Yeah, well, I mean, it first started out very cordial. They showed up at my door, which was a little unusual. You know, I've worked with law enforcement in the past, but they've always mailed the warrants to me, either via email or via snail mail, and I sent them back the information I had, which usually wasn't as much as they would have liked, just because I didn't collect as much as most people. But, you know, I'd never had a problem working with law enforcement. And the first thing I noticed was here were the agents showing up at my door, and it was all on the presumption of they wanted to streamline the process of serving me. They wanted to get a little information about me so they could run a background check and give me a security clearance. And I spent a couple hours talking to them about the architecture of my system. And when I first met them, the agents who were screening me actually didn't even know who was under investigation and what it was about. They were just asked to go clear me. And it would be about another month before I would get any kind of request. But again, that was a little bit weird because it was the first time I had been served in person. And technically I wasn't served. It was the FBI agent showing up at my door who initially said, we're expecting a warrant soon, and He was like, oh, it just showed up on my phone. Let me forward it to you. And, oh, by the way, this is what it says. Give us content, give us meta, give us passwords, and if you can't get that to us, you know, give us your SSL key and we'll collect it ourselves.
Oh, so I was going to say, was that based off of like a FISA court order, or was that a different judge that issued the warrant?
Was it the FISA court that issued that, or was it a different type of warrant?
This was not a FISA warrant, and I have to be very careful about what I say when it comes to FISA issues. But it's important to understand that at least in this case, it was not a FISA warrant, and that's one of the few pieces of good news. It was slightly easier to challenge this in a federal district court than if it had been an actual FISA warrant. And in talking to other people, usually what a service provider like myself would get would have been a FISA warrant. The problem with a FISA warrant is that any information collected as a result of it can't be used in a domestic criminal prosecution. Mm. And in this case, the investigation was into an American citizen, and it was for the purpose of carrying out a criminal prosecution. So they had to apply for the warrant in a federal district court. Now, call it the luck of the draw, if you believe in luck. But it ended up appearing before a judge, a federal district judge, who served on the FISA court from 2000 to 2007. If that tells you anything about his political leanings. And, of course, he sided with the government. Yeah, exactly. I've since asked how this particular judge could have ended up with this particular issue, and found out that at least in this particular courthouse, they don't disclose publicly the process used to determine which judge hears which case. Makes you wonder, huh? Don't you love secrets?
This is all stemming from they thought, they had suspicion that Edward Snowden had an email through this service. And I don't know if you can confirm or deny that, and I'm sure you probably wouldn't even know if that was the real Edward Snowden or not. I mean, is that why they turned their ire towards you? Is that the only reason, or do you kind of intimated that maybe it was also the fact that they didn't have control over your email service as well?
I had more than one political dissident and information leaker using my service, and one of the few pieces of information that still under seal is the target of the investigation.
Okay.
And I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, I didn't take the stand that I did to protect a particular individual. I took the stand that I did because it was going, what they wanted to do was going to infringe upon the privacy of all of my users, anyone that accessed my system. And I shut down my service because I took offense that, you know, they were making this what I considered to be illegal and unreasonable demand, and effectively handicapping my ability to fight it by making it illegal for me to tell anybody what they were doing. You know, I decided very early on when I got the request for the SSL key that if they were going to insist on carrying this out in secret, I was going to shut down the service because I felt that that was the only ethical thing I could do. I was completely uncomfortable with advertising myself as a secure service while at the same time being effectively a federal listening post. The words stool and pigeon kept popping into my head. But that's why I made two requests to have the documents unsealed, and both requests were denied. It wasn't until a recent request by the government came through that I've been able to basically tell anybody what happened or talk about any of my experiences when I was meeting with the FBI agents. It sends chills down my spine to know, you know, that this was going on. And the more I learned, the more scared I got. You know, I was just a little guy, a small businessman, and you know, I'm very involved with information security, so I have a lot of associates that work in that field. And when I started hearing what the FBI wanted to do, I started going to them and asking them and learning about some very scary things, things that I still can't even share. But it was just, I got this feeling that, you know, if we don't have a big brother, we at least have a little sister. And that little sister's going around, you know, listening to everything that we say and looking at everything that we do.
Ladar, when you took a stand and you eventually gave them your documents that they were requesting, according to a blog on the Dallas Observer, it says that you gave them 100 pages of paper in 4-point type. What was your thought process going into that?
The font size keeps getting smaller and the number of pages keeps getting larger every time I hear it.
Oh, is that what it is?
I heard yesterday, I heard it was 4-point font and 11 pages.
So what's the truth?
But, well, yeah, I mean, I printed out the keys and I handed them over. I was required to do so by law. Mm-hmm. I wasn't required to make their life easy. They were effectively destroying my business. If anything, I had a pretty strong incentive to not make their life easy. But they didn't like that, and they came back and filed an ex parte motion for a contempt citation, and they started charging me $5,000 a day until I turned over the keys in electronic form. Apparently, the FBI agents said they didn't sign up to become members of the FBI so they could become typists. They didn't want to type in the keys themselves. It's only 512 characters. It didn't seem like it was that big of a deal to me. But,
true or false, if you have to pay any fines, will you pay them in pennies?
Well, they here's the great thing. They handed me the citation, but then they couldn't come pick up the keys that day. So I ended up getting hit with a $10,000 fine.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, the decision to shut down became very easy. Up until that point, I had been going back and forth between shutting my service down for 24 hours in protest or shutting it down permanently. And I was afraid if I shut it down in protest for 24 hours, I'd get hit with another $25,000 fine if I wasn't thrown in jail. So I felt if I was going to fight this, I had to do it with the service shut down because I was just, like I said, completely uncomfortable with the idea of them looking at everyone's emails as they came in and out of my network and collecting people's passwords without being able to share that that was going on. Not to mention the fact that I didn't exactly have the resources to put together a legal team to mount a proper defense. There's a pretty good chance that I would have lost this fight in a hurry if I had to rely on my own resources. And if I end up winning this battle, it's only because people have managed to make donations to the legal defense fund. That's what's paying the lawyers to fight this. You know, we've already spent most of what we've raised on this first round. So if we end up going to the Supreme Court, it's going to be a whole other fundraising effort.
What is the future for LavaBit, for yourself? I mean, are you still facing any kind of charges or anything? And secondly, how can our listeners donate to help you fight this and offset these costs? And thank you via money for standing up for all of our rights.
Well, the future of LavaBit. When I first shut down the service, I looked into moving it abroad. But I quickly found out, quickly as in 2 to 3 weeks, which I guess is quick by lawyer standards, that even if I moved the service abroad as an American citizen living in America, I could literally be put in a position where I would either have to break the laws of the country, which is hosting the physical servers, or U.S. law. Because if I had access to the servers, they could still come to me and force me to turn over information. So once I kind of realized that, I decided that I would effectively have to keep the service shut down while I fight this battle in court. And what I've decided to do is, open source the code. Because if there can't be LavaBit, maybe there can be 100 LavaBit-like services. You know, I've often described myself as the guy that gave Obama the finger. Well, open sourcing the code and having 100 LavaBit-like services is just my way of basically giving the government the bird, you know, and sort of promoting the cause of private communications. Because I think if you don't have a right to privacy, then you effectively don't have your right to speak freely. And if there isn't a right to free speech, then you can't have an effective democracy. And we have no hope of ever winning back any of the freedoms that we've already lost.
Would you care to share what...
I mean, those are my politics. But yeah. You also asked about donating. People can go to LavaBit.com. There's a link at the bottom of that page that they can use to donate. And then there's also a webpage up at rally.org/LavaBit. And they recently started a big fundraising campaign to help with the effort as well. So, you know, I would encourage anyone who hears this who wants to help with the fight to go there. Unfortunately, I don't see any of that money. The lawyers figure out how to spend it, and they seem to be pretty good at it. But, you know, and the thing is, I'm fighting this for everybody. Because if I win or if I lose, it's going to affect every online service and every technology company here in the state.
What's next for you? As an entrepreneur, starting this, you know, essentially while you were in college, what's the next big thing you plan to do? Has this shaped what you want to work on going forward?
Like I said, I'm going to turn LavaBit from a services company into a software company. And I'm going to support the software. And I'm going to try and raise some money from some venture capitalists to hire a couple of programmers to clean up the code and release it. But for me personally, I've effectively been transformed from a small business owner into a political activist. And that's what I've been doing for the last 2 months is talking to folks like you and trying to help them understand what's at stake here and hope that enough people hear me that maybe Congress will actually do something about this. You know, I can fight the battle over whether or not the government has the right to demand SSL keys. And that's an incredibly important fight, but it's only one battle in an overall, a much larger war. And it's the battle over whether or not technology companies have the right to keep their products secure and keep information, you know, confidential, things like source code and, you know, product designs. Or can our government come in and force them to modify their products and turn over their encryption keys just so that the government can conduct surveillance? You know, does our right to privacy outweigh the government's need to conduct criminal investigations? And we had this debate in the 90s over the Clipper chip, and we decided that privacy was more important, which is why, you know, the last two administrations didn't go back to Congress and ask for this again. Instead, they went to the courts, and they asked for it there, but they kept it all secret, so nobody could get upset. You know, it's like they don't want to pay the political cost for their actions. So that's what's going on with me right now.
Is there a place that people can follow? Is there a place that people can follow you personally online so they can keep up to date with what's happening and how they can help?
Part of my obligation, right, is because I'm basically fighting this with people with money that people have donated. I feel this obligation to kind of keep them up to date about what's going on. If people follow my Facebook timeline, I've been trying to post updates on what I'm doing and who I'm talking to on there. And then, of course, in the media as well. I think they may try and put up a website at some point as well. But to date, that's pretty much all that's out there. You can obviously go to news.google.com and create an alert with my name or with LavaBit, and they'll send you all the articles. But you might get a flood. It was like there were a ton of articles right after the shutdown. And then, of course, with the unsealing, there are going to be a ton of articles now. And then... You know, next week we're going to be filing our appellate brief, and there'll be more coverage. And I've got a few other things coming along that I'm not quite ready to share yet. But I'm doing everything I can. I just think this fight's too important to lose.
Ladar, real quick, you're on the We Are Libertarians program. Obviously, you kind of know where we stand politically. And as a newly found political activist, I just wanted to know, how do you affiliate yourself politically?
I consider myself a conservative Republican because when I made that decision, conservative Republican meant small government. I don't consider myself a libertarian because I kind of believe we still need a federal government.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where you guys fall on the libertarian scale, but I also consider myself pretty liberal when it comes to social issues. I mean, the mm-hmm. fact of the matter is, I believe in freedom. And to me, freedom is about the ability to make a choice that somebody else would disagree with. And to that effect, basically, I don't like any instance in which a government comes in and makes a decision for us about how our money is spent. You know, every dollar that they take in taxes is $1 less of freedom that we have to decide how that money should be spent. Every time they take away a choice about what we do with our body or what business we decide, you know, company we decide to do business with, who we trust with our retirement funds, who we trust with our health care, they're taking away our freedom. And, you know, I'm of the personal political opinion they've gone too far.
Well, we have a saying here on We Are Libertarians that nobody recruits for the libertarian movement better than the federal government. So, you know, we're not personally anarchists, although we do have some anarchists in the network. But check out our podcast for a shameless self-promotion here, because it sounds like you're heading in that direction. So we really do.
Oh, we certainly have a lot in common.
Yeah, we do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and for all that you personally are going through on our behalf and on behalf of everyone in the United States. I mean, it really does. It does mean a lot to those of us out here who really care about privacy concerns and really see this as an incredible threat.
Just say thank you for having me. And you know, I look forward to talking to you guys again when the next story breaks. I think you know how to get in touch.
All right. Thank you very
much. Thanks, Ladar.